This is the iPhone LA Podcast, episode 21 for September 12th, 2008. My iPhone works again. Well, it is time for the iPhone Alley Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and I'm here with our fabulous panel to discuss all things iPhone. From the Mac Observer, Jeff Gamet is here. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Michael. As always, thank you for having me on. You're amazingly tolerant. You keep letting me come back.
We love having you, Jeff.
Oh, you're so sweet.
And from the Mac Cast, we have Mr. Well, he's not here, but Adam Christensen will be here, hopefully. He hasn't joined us in the Skype call yet, but we figured we'd get things rolling. Callie Lewis is also here from Geek Brief TV. Hello, Callie.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great having you. And we are honored to have Mr. Jason Snell from Macworld Magazine here. Hello, Jason.
Hi there. Thanks for inviting me. We'll see how much of an honor it is after I've been on for a little while, but thank you.
Well, thanks for being here. So let's talk about some iPhone news. We usually just do a whole bunch of, you know, chit chat, but I figured we'd, you know, make this a quick show. And so obviously on Tuesday, Apple held their Let's Rock event in San Francisco, and Steve Jobs introduced a new iPod Touch, some new Nanos, and of course a new version of iTunes. Quoting from the iTunes 8 update, iTunes 8 includes Genius, which makes playlists from songs in your library that go well together. Genius also includes the Genius Sidebar, which recommends music from the iTunes store that you don't already have, which is a feature I love. That's working great for me. And also included in the update is the new grid view, TV shows in HD, and of course the new visualizer that Kevin Rose predicted. So iTunes 8 came out that day. It was Tuesday, and that was the big thing for iPhone users because, you know, Steve Jobs also mentioned that the iPhone 2.1 software update would come out today, which is Friday, and we'll get to that in a minute, but let's talk about iTunes 8. Like I said before, my favorite feature is really the Genius feature because I do a lot of browsing through the iTunes store already to find music that I think, you know, I would like. So I go and I find an artist that, you know, I already have, and, you know, kind of based on the suggestions in iTunes, I'll look around at, you know, new stuff and do the previewing because it's really, really great to just double click and preview a song. So now with the Genius sidebar, whenever you select a song in your library, it will show, I think maybe five songs, that you don't have from the same artist, which is really handy, so you can figure out what you're missing. It's not entirely accurate yet. I've been getting a lot of, you know, you're listening to this song, and it also recommends that you should get the same song that you're listening to, so that's a little weird. But my favorite is, of course, the
maybe it knows they stole you. Maybe they know you stole that song.
that might be it, maybe. But the Genius feature is the coolest part, where it, you know, recommends other songs based on that song right there, and it has a whole list right there, and you just click once, and it'll actually give you a preview. You don't have to actually go into the iTunes store. So that's my favorite feature. Jeff, what do you like about the new iTunes 8?
You know, the one feature that I'm excited about is the Genius feature. The whole grid view thing, I'm not excited about that on any level. But the Genius thing I'm really liking, and I'm liking it so much that I'm not even bothering to have it find things on the iTunes store for me yet. I'm just having it find stuff in my own library and coming up with all these really cool playlists loaded with songs that, in many cases, I forgot I had.
Yeah, that is a really cool feature. So the other part of the whole Genius is that, you know, once when you first download iTunes 8 and install it, it'll go through your entire library and analyze it in, you know, whatever way it does. It actually sends all that information once it's done. And for me, it took maybe an hour because my library is so big. And then it sends it back to the iTunes store where they do some magic on it and send back the magic. And, you know, then iTunes knows how to group songs. So the idea there is you click on a song in your library, hit the Genius button, and then you're brought to this magical new playlist with a whole bunch of songs that go well with that song that you were listening to.
So it's working for all you guys, because I haven't been able to get anything out of it.
Really? So you've clicked it and you do the mm-hmm. genius thing, and it just, what does it do?
It just tells me it's unavailable. And I've tried, you know, a couple of kind of random things that I would imagine it wouldn't work with, but things like Sting, Patti LaBelle, Miles Davis, even Britney Spears, it just said it's not available.
Oh, wow.
So it's working for all
of
you.
There is one quirk about Genius that I think is going to make it more useful in a week or two than it is right now, which is, you know, one of the ways Genius learns is that you're uploading all your information and it's anonymous, mm-hmm. but it gets added to the database. But to launch it, before we all had it, the way Apple primed the Genius pump was to use store data, which means that it only has data about songs that are in the store. And so I know a lot of people have seen, for things like Beatles songs, that Genius kind right. of shrugs and says, I have no idea what you're talking about. And my hope is that in a week or two, it'll have a much better idea, because all the people with Beatles in their library will have uploaded their Genius information.
So hopefully I'm helping with that, because I uploaded my library and I have a lot of Beatles stuff. So, you know, I took one for the team there.
Thanks for pitching in.
Thank yes. you.
Sure thing.
So I'm curious to know how that... that actually works, because Steve Jobs did mention that, you know, as more iTunes libraries are added to the Genius collective, I guess, it gets smarter and recommends better songs. And I'm kind of curious how that works. Do you have any idea, Jason, of how, you know, they go through that? And
it's magic. Apple was not forthcoming at all about how it actually works. All we know is that it's trying to aggregate sort of, I mean, because I'm not sure whether it's looking in playlists that you make, or if it's just looking at your library and saying people who have this song in their library are likely to have these other songs in their library. I think it's doing a lot of different stuff. I think it's doing some stuff that Apple's probably licensed from third parties that tries to get down to the song level. So it's not just about I have this and I have this, but like what the mood is and what the, right. the tempo is. So, but you know, it's Apple. So as far as they're concerned, it is magic. And when I asked them about it, that's basically what they said, is it's magic.
Yeah. Well, you know, I really noticed that, you know, with some stuff, like if I, you know, start some Daft Punk, it'll give me a whole lot of, you know, really good, you know, energetic music. And I've noticed at some points, it'll give me a really strange collection of music in the Genius, where the two songs that kind of, you know, go together, the you know, the first and the second song, the first song is kind of, you know, some way, and then it kind of transitions to this next song, and then it kind of changes up the mood a little bit. So it kind of does that. It seemed like it was at least trying to, you know, change the mood for each song, but it was still the kind of same basic idea with the music. I'm not really sure how that works, and I'd be really interested to know how they're, you know, at least how to do a little bit with Genius, so I can, you know, make it smarter. So I'm thinking, you know, if I listen to this song and then I listen to this song next after that, I wonder if they take that information or something like that. Just something how Pandora lets you, you know, thumbs up or thumbs down with the music. Some way that we can kind of, you know, push the Genius feature along so it can, you know, get smarter quicker, you know, based on, you know, what we know. And Adam Christensen has finally popped in. Hello, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, you made it.
Yeah, I hope, and hopefully my audio plays nice, but it sounds like I might not be.
It's pretty choppy.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
All right, we are back. Unfortunately, we couldn't get Adam Christensen to hop in, so we'll try and get him on the next show. So I think we were talking about the Genius feature. I don't remember exactly where we left off with that. But has it been working well for you, Jason?
Yeah, it's working pretty well. I mean, it's definitely weird. It's using, I heard somebody comparing it to Pandora, and it works like Pandora, but Pandora has access to everything, and Genius only has access to your library. Right. So I have seen the effect of it picking songs I didn't know I had, which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
But it does a pretty good job. It's interesting. It makes some assumptions about what you're doing, one of which is, like, if you pick an artist from the 80s, it says, oh, you want to listen to guys from the 80s, and it fills my playlist with things from the 80s. And sometimes that's not really what I intended. So, you know, I do wonder what exactly it's using to make its judgments. But generally, it's done a pretty good job so far. I mean, I've tried 5 or 10 different playlists.
Yeah. And sometimes I'll get something that I don't really enjoy, mostly because it's just something I have in my library that I don't particularly like. And I wonder if, do you know if it stays in the same playlist that you're in, or will it grab music from your entire library? Because I have this one playlist which I spend, you know, 90% of my time on, because some other stuff is like classical and jazz and stuff that doesn't go, you know, really well with, you know, rock music that I listen to for the most part. Do you know if it stays in the same playlist, or?
Pretty sure it's just picking from your entire library.
Okay.
That should be an option setting.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to see a lot of options, you know, soon with Genius, because I can see a lot of, you know, places where, you know, tweaks would be really great to have in there. So it would be great to see some way of, you know, training the Genius, because I can see it getting really good.
You know, right.
Because it's already good now, especially, like I said, my favorite feature being the choosing of, you know, suggesting new music, which is something that iTunes already does in the store. And I wonder if they're going to continue improving that engine also based on, you know, all the information from other Genius users.
Actually, I wonder if Genius takes advantage of the skip feature, where iTunes keeps track of if you skip a track before it's done.
Yeah.
I wonder if Genius weights that in and says, oh, they don't want to hear that, and just drops it out. I don't know. That would be a nice little feature, because that would be very similar to giving it a thumbs down in Pandora.
Right.
It would just be using iTunes and watching for skips.
And see, that's why I would like Apple to let us know, at least just kind of give us a couple hints on that, because I would love, you know, if I'm listening to something and I don't like it, if I have to make the conscious effort of skipping it, I'll certainly do that to improve, you know, its intelligence for, you know, later use. So that would be very cool. iTunes 8 also brings along HD TV shows, and of course NBC came back, which was just amazing when I heard that, because I got into the office right, you know, maybe a month after NBC was pulled off of the store, and so I was forced to either go to, you know, the Blockbuster and I guess rent the seasons, or, you know, download it in ways that aren't great. And I would certainly prefer to pay for it, because I absolutely love The Office, as well as Heroes. Both shows I got really into as soon as NBC was pulled off of the store. So NBC is back, along with, you know, a lot of their shows are in HD. I don't think all of them are in HD, but quite a few of them are. Have any of you downloaded any HD TV shows yet?
Oh, yeah.
Not yet.
I downloaded season 4 of Lost, which was approximately 30 gigabytes.
Wow.
Took two days.
Oh, man.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So
have you watched them all? That's the big question.
I've actually watched them when they aired, but I do love Lost. It's one of my favorite shows. So I thought I would give it a try. And it's a 14, I think, episode season. So it's actually not 30 gigabytes. It's not a full size season.
Oh, wow.
So imagine what that must be like. But I just wanted to see what the process went. It looks great. It really looks fantastic on a computer screen or on an Apple TV. And it comes with the iPod version, which is actually a really high quality version, the iPod version.
So it actually downloads an iPod version that you can sync when you download the HD version?
Yeah, it downloads two versions, and with Lost, what you get is one that's 720 pixels high. That's your 720p HD. Yep. And then you get another one that's 480 pixels high, which is standard def. But it's widescreen and 480 pixels high. So it's actually higher than standard def in terms of width. It just in terms of height, it's a standard def picture. So it's a lot of data. Like I said, it's about 30 gigs all told to get the whole season down, and that was a 14 episode season.
So how big is the file that you have to sync over to your iPod, or is it iPod and iPhone and iPod Touch, or is it just like iPod Touch?
Well, you know, it'll work with any Apple video playing device, and
okay.
That's about what. I want to say it's a 600 or 700 meg file.
Okay.
And then the HD one is, you know, a gig and a half.
Right. Okay. So now the song, the TV shows rather, it's normally $1.99 for a TV show. I believe it's a dollar more for HD when you can get it, right?
Right.
Right.
Okay.
And then there's some special pricing for seasons. The sort of networks can pick how they want to price a whole season. Sometimes you can get a deal there.
Yep.
But the individual, it's $1.99 or $2.99.
Now, it has season passes. Do the season passes only work? Are those only for when the show is actually airing?
I think that's let's see. No, you can buy, basically, season pass is sort of you buy the season and then you get it in installments, and
right.
And once the season's done, you can still go back. Like with Lost, I essentially bought a season pass, but it was, you know, after the season's done, it's more like a box set. And then just instead of downloading one at a time, it just says, I'm going to download 30 gigs of stuff now.
Right, exactly. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to, you know, The Office. Then again, you know, The Office is already airing on TV, so I don't know if I'm going to be buying many of them from iTunes, but I guess I'll have to see. I've never actually done the season pass thing, so I'd be interested to see, you know, how well that works. And do you generally get a deal if you do the season pass?
I think so. I think that's the idea, is you get a little bit of a deal.
Okay. All right.
It just goes towards moving us further along in the whole, you know, what we want, where we want, and when we want it process, because being able, I probably won't download all of the offices on iTunes, but if I travel and I miss a show or whatever, I definitely want to have that availability. So yeah. I'm really excited about it.
Although there is,
that's when it hurt me, was when my DVR crashed and I missed an episode of The Office. Oh. And I said, oh, well, I'll go to iTunes and
Yeah.
So it's good that it's back.
So, do you know anything about the story behind NBC? Obviously, they left over, I guess it was pricing disputes, like last year, I believe, and then they, of course, started up Hulu, where they aired, you know, some of their shows, most of their shows, and you know, very, you know, few episodes of them. Do you know anything about, you know, the story behind them coming back?
Nobody really knows. All I can tell you is, as far as I can tell, Apple's pricing policy hasn't really changed.
Right.
I think maybe there was some ego there that got in the way, believe it or not. It's shocking. Somehow I think NBC realized that people wanted to give them money for their shows and that Hulu is a different thing. I mean, when I mentioned that I bought Lost, I had somebody on Twitter say, dude, don't you know they're on ABC.com for free in HD? And my response was, yeah, I don't want to watch it on my computer. I want to watch it on my TV. That's why I'm buying them. So I think NBC realized Hulu and iTunes are different, and that's, Hulu's got ads, iTunes there are no ads, but you pay, and I think they wanted the money. So I suspect that this was more NBC realizing they needed to come back and hopefully save some face in the process. They were really upfront at the Steve Jobs event, which was good publicity for them.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, Jason, I think you're absolutely right. I think it came down to the money, and you know, actually, I know I'm in a minority, but I think Hulu sucks. I think it really sucks. I do not want to sit at my computer and watch a TV show. And I don't want to watch a TV show sitting at my computer knowing that I'm going to have to watch crap commercials. I mean, if I'm going to do that, I'll just unplug my TiVo and sit in front of my television instead. At least I'll have my couch. So I'm really glad that NBC is back, because now when I miss something on TiVo, I can go get it. The thing that I'm really disappointed about, though, is that they do have HD, which means I no longer have an excuse not to go buy an Apple TV.
Oh, you don't have an Apple TV?
No, I've never picked one up, because I just, you know, with the quality, it was just one of those things where I wasn't downloading enough TV shows to justify it, and I would just go plug my MacBook Pro into the TV when I wanted to watch a show I had downloaded.
Gotcha.
But now with HD, well, I'm afraid that I'm just going to have to succumb and buy an Apple TV.
I love my Apple TV. You know, I could have just, you know, plugged in my MacBook Pro like, you know, like you do into the TV, but I thought, yeah, you know, sometimes I'm going to have my MacBook Pro with me, and it's not really that good of a solution, because you have to actually, you know, go over to the TV and kneel down and, you know, pick out what you want and move it over and manage all that, and, you know, the Apple TV just works. And, you know, that's what I really like, is that it's just such a simple solution. You know, and I actually bought a TV for the Apple TV, because my previous TV didn't have, you know, an HDMI connector. So,
wow, you're hardcore.
That's serious.
Yeah. I'm kind of strange.
You know, I don't know anyone that could truthfully say before now that their television was an accessory to their Apple TV.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. That's how it is. But I do like my Apple TV. It's great. And I'm really excited to be able to, you know, get those shows on there. And I also bought an antenna for, you know, HD watching of the TV. But anyway, should we talk about Kevin Rose and how, you know, he was right on with all this stuff, including the visualizer. Uh-oh.
Oh my God, I'm sorry.
That has Bless you.
That has never happened on a podcast before.
It's fine. I thought
you were making a joke or something about Kevin Rose.
Yeah, I thought it was in response to Kevin Rose.
No, I mean, the timing was fantastic.
It was perfect.
No, I just sneezed.
Gotcha. Well, Kevin Rose was spot on with just, I think, absolutely everything, including the visualizer and even, you know, him saying that the 2.1 update would be out for the iPod Touch and it would be out and the iPhone version would be out a couple days later. I think that's great. You know, in the past, Kevin Rose's sources haven't been that great. I guess we can use him as a legitimate source now because, you know, he obviously has connections. I mean, he even posted pictures of the iPod Nano, which they introduced. And Callie, you actually have an iPod Nano, right?
I do. I went to the store to take a look at both, and I wound up with both a Nano and a Touch, brought it home. I justify this shopping habit that I have at the Apple stores by saying it's my job.
That's what we all say, and it's not true. We just like the toys.
And the reflection, I was always worried, you know, I didn't think that this would be the announcement that Apple made because of the reflection that you saw in the photos,
right?
Kevin's photos and the other ones that followed suit. And it is it's an issue. At the Apple store, you could see like a whole lineup. And if you were off to the side, you saw reflection, 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 reflection. And I was like, great. But I bought it anyway. And I brought it home, and I'm playing the same, you know, TV show on both right now. And there is still the reflection on the Touch, but because it's a bigger screen, it doesn't bother me mm-hmm. at all. You know, or it bothers me less on the Touch than it does on the Nano because it's such a small screen. I don't want anything to bother my picture. And I'm the kind of person, maybe I'm a little bit nitpicky, but I'm the kind of person, if I'm watching something on my computer, if the cursor is in the way, I've got to move that. It bugs the heck out of me. So right. Maybe I'm a little bit too nitpicky, but.
So you like the iPod Nano otherwise. Which color did you get?
I got black.
You got the black
one. I was deciding between red and black, and I think the black is just pretty.
Yeah, the black
and
nice.
For watching video, obviously, it's always nice to have the black surrounding it. But the Nano itself, it's very nice. It's so lightweight. It's beautiful. Watching video on it can be a little distracting, I guess.
Yeah. Well, so you watch the video in, you have to tip it to the side, right, to watch the video just like you do on the iPod Touch and the iPhone, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's got an accelerometer also that it, you know, obviously borrowed from the iPod Touch and the iPhone. And that's just, is that basically for just doing cover flow right now?
It seems to be.
Okay.
You know, I just got it and I just got it synced about 15 minutes before we got here. So I haven't had a whole lot of time. It's still kind of first impressions right at this point.
So, Jason, I know that at least from what I've seen, it looks like they're going to be bringing a version of Spore Origins to the iPod Nano, right?
Is that right? Yeah, I think so. I think there's an iPod version and an iPhone iPod Touch version.
Now, I don't know if that would be, I mean, that seems like kind of a stretch to me. Yeah, it has the accelerometer, and we all know that that works really well. But with the iPod Nano, you don't have the touch screen, and of course, it's much smaller. Have you played Spore Origins on an iPhone?
I haven't. I haven't seen it at all.
Okay.
Other than the demos. I am blissfully ignorant of the whole Spore thing so far. I'm sure I'll get there eventually.
Gotcha.
I have not created any spores yet.
That's very cool that they, you know, at least did something with the accelerometer besides CoverFlow, and they kind of borrowed something from, you know, the iPhone and all of that. You also have the iPod Touch, which the coolest thing from that, you know, this now has, well, there are actually quite a few cool things that I really like. Obviously, it's redesigned. It's even skinnier, which is just mind-blowing. It also has volume control buttons that it borrowed from the iPhone. I think that it has a microphone integration that you can use if you have the headset that has the microphone in there. And it doesn't come with that headset, does it?
No.
Okay.
No, it doesn't.
No.
Okay, so it can use...
It does have the speaker, though, too.
So where is the speaker? I've been curious about that. Is that coming out of the dock?
It seems to be. Do you know, Jason?
It's attached. The guys at iFixit took it apart and found out that it's attached to the back plate toward the bottom When we got ours on the first day, Chris Breen, Dan Frakes, and I were standing around it trying to figure out where the sound comes from. And it's really like oozing out of every possible crack in the bottom half of the iPod Touch. So it's not actually sticking out of a hole. It's actually just attached to the back, and then it kind of makes – it doesn't sound great, but it does sound, which is good because so many iPhone apps sort of assume that there's some sound. And on the Touch, it was always very confusing.
Phone Saber, of course.
Of course.
That's a must-have app, yes. So does it sound – is it as loud as the iPhone speaker? I imagine it's a little muffled.
It is.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's not even close.
It's a little muffled, yeah.
Do you think it's – will music actually come out of there if you don't have headphones plugged into it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's –
well, it comes out. It's just not as loud. So you have to kind of turn it up full volume.
Well, that's always been, you know, one of the big things with the iPod is, you know, when you're with a friend and you're saying, here, you know, check out this song, and you do the awkward, you know, one earbud in each person's ear. And then that gets to
be kind of gross if you think about it.
Yeah, exactly. So I really like the speaker, and that's why I've always told people who are considering the iPhone or the iPod Touch, I've told them to go with the iPhone just for the sake of the speaker. You know, obviously it's a phone too, and it does all this great stuff. But yeah, I think that's a really cool feature. And I guess iFixit also found that there's a Bluetooth chip in there that actually is for the Nike Plus iPod thing, which is something that right now the iPhone cannot do. I don't think it can it do it with the actual the dock connector that comes with that, or does it just not work at all?
It doesn't work at all.
Doesn't work at all. Okay. Well, I guess there's been. Do you, Jason, know if it's possible to, you know, add a software update and just kind of, because it is Bluetooth that it's connecting with, do you know if a software update could fix that, or if it's, you know, proprietary, or have you
heard
anything?
That's a great question. I mean, since there's a Nike Plus app, and since it seems to use a Bluetooth chip to talk to the Nike Plus thing over the same frequency, I guess it's theoretically possible. I don't know whether Apple actually plans on doing it, but, you know, they probably could. I don't know whether that Bluetooth chip can be both a Nike Plus transceiver and an actual Bluetooth transceiver at the same time or not.
Yeah.
So that for me, that would be the big limitation, would be the question of if you could do both at once.
You couldn't use your Bluetooth headset along with the Nike Plus iPod.
Right, or if you had to flash the firmware on the chip to make it a Nike Plus, and then it wouldn't talk to Bluetooth devices or something like that.
Right.
It may be, you know, easier said than done. It might be something that it could theoretically do. That's the mystery, is can it really do it in the real world? But it certainly would be nice. There are a lot of people I know who go running and they take their phone with them because if they, like, break a leg, they can call somebody for help. So
right,
it would
exactly.
be nice
yeah.
if the Nike Plus worked with it.
Yep. Well, so it has the Nike Plus iPod, the speaker, the volume controls. That's the iPod Touch, and I guess they lowered the prices on those, right? That's $229 for the 8 gigabyte, correct?
Right.
And so then it's remind me of the prices again for the other models.
I think it's $299 and then like $349. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that sounds a bit about right. Yeah, so it's 8, 16, and 32 that you can get. So the prices have been lowered, so it's, you know, not as ridiculous as, you know, saying, well, there's the iPhone and then there's this. So, you know, you get a lot more capacity.
Fantastic job with it. I mean, Jason, don't you think so? I mean, it feels awesome in your hand, and it feels so much, I don't know, it feels better made.
They've learned that since you cup things in your hand and your hand makes a natural curve, that
right.
you can create this illusion of thinness where even when there is some thickness, by just rounding the edges and making it thinner on the end. And that's what they did with the Nano, just like they did with the iPhone 3G and it and the Touch. And it works because, you know, your hand is curved, so you're not feeling the back, you're feeling the edges, and
right,
it makes it super thin. And with the screen, you can't make it tiny, so the only dimension where they can really come down is that thinness.
Exactly. And, you know, I think it is even a hair thinner at its thickest point, right? The iPod Touch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's slightly taller than the 2G Nano. The Nano is slightly taller than 2G Nano, but you can't tell, right? I mean, there's like cold hard measurements, and then there's hand feel. And in the hand, these things really feel thin. And compared to an iPhone, that Touch it's so much thinner. It's shocking.
Yeah, I really like the new curve of the new iPhone. And speaking of the iPhone, Apple released the highly anticipated iPhone 2.1 software update this morning. And according to Apple, the iPhone 2.1 software update contains many fixes, many bug fixes, improvements, increased or decreased call failures and dropped calls, significantly better battery life, dramatically reduced backup times, as well as many other bug fixes and improvements. I updated this morning gleefully. I threw my iPhone into the dock last night before I went to bed, so I can have it all completely backed up. So if I woke up in the morning and I had to go and possibly restore my phone, I wouldn't feel like I would have to wait. I don't know. I guess again, it's the whole it's my job and I have to be right on it and go quickly with it. But of course, I was really excited about it because the iPhone, as you've heard on this podcast, the iPhone 2.0 update has been awfully awfully annoying for most people. We've had a lot of crashes, a lot of phone crashes, app crashes, really strange things, ridiculously long backup times, of course. So this update fixes, as far as I can tell, it fixes all of that stuff. And I think this is one of the updates that really just doesn't include any new features aside from the Genius feature. And I think it's probably the most popular update that I've really observed so far with the iPhone. Have you guys have all updated your iPhones, I assume. Jason, what have you seen with the iPhone 2.1?
It's so early to tell about stability. I mean, that's one of those things, you can check off the boxes of like this new feature. Oh, the way podcasts and videos are displayed is different now. It'll, instead of just saying whether you've played it or not, it'll say whether you've played some of it. There's a little like blue dot with half of it filled in.
Yeah.
And the podcast will tell you how much you've got left on your podcast if you're listening to a long podcast. The stability stuff, though, you got to live with it for some amount of time to really see if it's more stable and if it's not dropping connections like it was. And for that, we're gonna have to wait a week and really see what people are seeing. But so that's the tricky thing about any new update.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I update it and I get going with it and I'm really excited to look at, all the new features. I'm thinking, okay, well, it hasn't crashed yet. Okay, it hasn't crashed yet. It's really difficult to know, how great it is. But as far as, things like speed, the interface has really, really picked up. I can tell that immediately. When I'm going through the iPod, it's just lightning fast. It seems ridiculously fast. And it seems like, the iPod or the iPhone was initially. You don't get that lag with contacts in the phone application anymore, which is great because that was always awful, showing off your phone. I mean, you don't want your phone to be slow and laggy while you're giving a demo, but it's also extremely frustrating when you're trying to, call someone, obviously, because you don't want to sit there and fiddle with your phone for 10 minutes when all you want to do is just pick up the phone and call someone and, say something to someone. So that has been significantly improved. That was one of the huge problems I've had. Another weird issue that I think I've complained about on the show is that with 2.0, I could be listening to music with my headphones like I usually do, and I'll get a call in, and obviously the idea is that the music fades out and then the call comes in and you answer it. For me, it has actually been kind of the opposite. The music actually will sharply spike up in volume and then cut out with maybe a little bit of a crackle and maybe some distortion. And then the ringer will happen and it'll be very slow. So it's so much better now. It just works like it should. And I'm very happy with it. Jeff, have you noticed anything different with the update besides, improved speed? And what are you happy about with the new update?
All right. I'll give you my happy, then my unhappy. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
Great. Okay. So I now have 3G reception in my office.
Yes.
And that has never happened. And to give people perspective, I live at the north end of Denver on the west side of I-25. So this is kind of a bad area for 3G reception. And I actually can get a signal in my office now. And my iPhone is switching between Edge and 3G like it's supposed to. And it has not done that since the day I bought it. So I'm really pleased with that. And I have noticed, here's just a little cosmetic thing. The 3G and the Edge icons in the little bar at the top of your screen, they're different now.
Yeah, I did notice that. Do you like that?
Yeah. No, actually, I don't.
I don't either.
It feels more like
just a crappy cell phone.
Any other cell phone. And I don't have any other cell phone. I have a fracking iPhone.
Exactly. You can you can make your iPhone into your phone into a lightsaber. You should have really pretty graphics everywhere.
Right. So, you know, but that's a minor cosmetic thing. And as long as everything else is working, I will complain about this, but not adamantly.
Oh yeah.
Now, I have noticed that NetNewsWire, which has run deplorably for me since I installed it, still crashes every time I launch it.
Okay.
I was hoping that that would start working for me. I also noticed that the bug I was experiencing where I had an empty icon space on one of my app pages, and it would just kind of move around depending on what apps I was adding or removing.
So you had a ghost application?
Yes.
Oh,
so I had
interesting.
I had this ghost space, and it was like in the top two rows. It would move around between those top two rows depending on how many apps I had loaded. That's gone now. Let's see. The address book scrolling for me is better.
Oh yeah.
But I'm still very disappointed with it. So when my address book list comes up, the first thing I do is go to the address column down the right, tap on that so I can move up and down to the section of the address book I want.
Right.
And that is stunningly sluggish.
Really?
I have not seen any improvement on my iPhone with that feature. But the other things involving address books seem a lot faster.
My address book is it's insanely fast. It's, you know, it's completely fluid in the way that it should be. I haven't had any issues with it. The search feature I haven't tested out, and I know that was pretty basic. It wasn't like I think that you could do stuff like searching for, obviously you can search for the name and you can search for the company of the person that you're looking for, but you can't do things like looking for like a phone number or something like that. And it doesn't seem like that's been improved yet. And I really think that they should, because I mean, it's a search feature.
Right.
Another thing that I noticed, and I was going back and forth with one of the guys from Twitterific, Icon Factory rather, about this, and it's not really their fault and it's not really Apple's fault either, but I've noticed that with some of the applications that have pre-rendered icons that, you know, don't require the gloss that Apple automatically puts on an application icon, that has kind of changed around. So maybe some of your applications will look goofy until, you know, they put out an update. But I've also heard that, you know, speaking of updates, people who update applications now through the App Store, the apps don't, you know, reset to their default location, you know, at the beginning, you know, the next free spot. It actually stays in the spot that you left it in, which is something that has bugged many, many people, because at least with the previous updates, moving icons around has been really, it's been a pain, because it's just kind of slow, and you can't really skip over a page if you don't want to, you know, create a space for that application. So that's one of the things. Callie, what have you noticed with the 2.1 update? Have you noticed anything cool?
Well, ever since 2.0.2, I haven't had any dropped calls. I haven't had any apps crash. It's been pretty good for me since 0.2. So I haven't noticed anything really different. I am excited about what you were just saying, you know, the apps staying where they should be. Like Jeff, I'll agree with him. My address bar is my contacts are a bit sluggish going through them. So that's really it. I mean, I haven't had any issues with dropped calls or crashing apps for a while now. So I'm going to just kind of be moving along as I have been for the last however long it's been. A few weeks?
Yeah. There are also some cool, like, little unannounced features that they have in there. You can also tap an application that's installing. So if it's downloading information, if you want to pause it, you can actually just tap it and it'll pause so you can, you know, pick up on it later. Obviously, the typing is much faster. I've had so many, you know, spots where it's just insanely sluggish, and it's not sluggish anymore. And I, you know, I have to get out and, you know, test it, like we were saying, you know, because I've had a lot of problems where we're traveling down the road and we're listening to some music, but we're also using Google Maps and it's just insanely slow. So I'll have to wait and see how that turns out. But I've noticed go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, well, what about, you know, downloading apps from the App Store on the phone that had caused issues with apps crashing and everything? Have we heard anything about that? I haven't been able to find anything.
I just downloaded an update, and I was kind of amazed at how fast it downloaded, and not just speed, but it actually gave feedback that was usable, unlike in previous where it sort of like stalls and then you sit there wondering what's going on. It actually seemed to move the progress bar in a sane way and explain that it was done downloading and now it was installing. So I think maybe they've worked out some of the kinks with the whole app install process too.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah. And, you know, also with along the lines of the apps, I don't know what they're doing, if they've stopped backing up the entire applications and just kind of, backed up the data from the applications that aren't default, but the backups have been significantly faster. I think the backup that I made, it was a full backup last night. It probably took 2 hours. I have 50 applications on here, and the full backup that I did this morning after updating my phone, it took, I believe, about 5 minutes now. And of course, now with, after you've done your first backup, it actually does take a lot less time to do a backup because it's just... I believe, from what I've seen, with messing around on the internals of the file system on the iPhone, it looks like it actually has the FS events, the same time machine type technology that Leopard has. So I think it's making use of that so it doesn't have to make complete backups every single time. Something else that I've noticed.
That was so annoying.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my update took 9 minutes, and it typically takes an hour to an hour and 15 minutes. So that's thrilling because I would avoid plugging in my iPhone and because of the whole backup process. It just made me not want
to
do it.
Well, there was a hack also to disable the automatic backups that we posted. And I actually had that enabled on my computer, and I disabled it finally because I do want the backups because they're not that insanely... it doesn't take that much time now with the backups. And how many applications do you have on your phone, Callie?
I have the max 8 pages.
Oh, wow. You are crazy with the applications. I think I only have like...
You go, girl. Wow.
I think I have maybe 4 pages of applications on my phone. So, it only took me like 5 minutes. But I guess, the more apps you have with... I assume it's based on just extra information, preferences and all of that user information for the applications that it's backing up. Takes.
But also, my 9 minutes was on an iMac G5. That's an older computer. It's sluggish anyway. So I attributed it to that.
Gotcha. Well, another thing that I noticed, I have a really, really long SMS conversation. I think it goes back to October of 2007. And, that's one of the things that I like about the interface. It's not a problem to save that conversation. It actually now only goes back to August 19th of this year, and it has another button there that says load earlier messages. So if you tap that maybe like 5 times, it keeps incrementally increasing the amount of messages. So I think that's kind of maybe one of the cheats that they added in there to make SMS kind of quicken up. But it's certainly, even if I load up all the messages, it's much faster there. And I forgot to mention, along the lines of Signal, and where I usually work on stuff, I get maybe 1 or 2 bars of Signal. Now I get 4 to 5, which is outstanding. And our associate editor on iPhone Alley, Ed Kirk, he usually does not get any reception at his house whatsoever. And so his iPhone is essentially a PDA. And after the update, he I was talking to him on iChat, and he just kind of said, hang on a second, let me try something. And I'm getting a call from him, from his cell phone. And I say, hi, Ed, you're at your house. You're actually getting reception. And so that's why I'm going to call the 2.1 update miraculous, because you cannot get signal at his house at all.
What Apple says is that they changed the way the bars are calculated. And, bars, there's no such thing. There's not like a scientist in a white lab coat who comes out and says, that a bar is equal to approximately. I mean, it's made up, right? I mean, you could have a scale that's percentage-based. It could be logarithmic. And it sounds to me like the 3G bars were messed up, where you almost always either saw that you had a full signal or you were down at almost nothing. And it sounds like they've recalculated the bars. So he may have always had a signal that came and went, but it showed no bars, and now shows more bars. I'm not entirely convinced that they've fixed his reception problem as much as maybe psychologically they've shown him that he has a little bit of reception that he didn't think he had. I don't know.
I've also noticed that it kind of switches between, like Jeff was saying, Edge and 3G. a lot quicker, as well as if you, you know, lose reception, it'll say obviously no signal, but it will quickly pick back up on it as soon as you get it. Because I noticed at least, you know, especially with 2.0, it took a long, long time for it to figure out that you, yes, you had, you know, reception again. You know, I would, to the point where I would actually go into the settings and turn on airplane mode and turn it off so I could actually get reception when I wanted it because I knew it was there. So I think they've definitely done something with the radio where it, you know, samples, you know, the airwaves a little quicker or something like that. But it also, you know, has an improved battery life, and that's not something that we can really talk about at this point because, you know, it's only been out for a few hours now. But I'm assuming that if it has improved battery life and it's doing that same, you know, signal, you know, switching and calculating on, and all of that, I don't think that what they're doing with the cell radio is negatively impacting the battery life, which is something I guess we're going to have to wait and see. But I'm really excited about that too, because as an iPhone 3G owner, it's it sure likes that battery.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, there's one feature that I haven't had a chance to check and see if it was added in yet, and it's one that I've been waiting for since version 1. The iPhone, okay, to preface this, I'm left-handed. So most devices that I play with are backwards to me. Mm-hmm. And the iPhone is included. And I've been hoping that they would add a little toggle switch in there somewhere so I could take address book and flip where the controls are so it's left-handed.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's in there, but I haven't had a chance to look, and I can't right now because my iPhone is actually out of reach. So I'll check on that later.
I doubt that'll come out this soon. I mean, nothing against left-handed people, of course, but I don't think that's that high on their list.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I know. Back of the bus for me.
I've also...
I mean, I'm all for you left-handed people. My mom's left-handed, but, you know.
Well, Twitterific has left-handed controls, right? I've never, you know, switched on that box, but have you seen that? Does that help you?
Yeah, I use Twitterific left-handed.
Oh, okay, cool. They also mentioned in the update, you know, points of, you know, what they've changed. Obviously, you can do the Genius playlist creation now, the same thing that you can do on iTunes, which is very, very cool. And I think that you can do that on the iPod Nano as well, right? Callie, can you do that?
I believe it's on the Nano, on the Touch, and on the iPhone.
Cool.
Right.
So, yeah, now you can, you know, if you're listening to a song and you think, man, I would just love to listen to some more music that sounds, you know, that kind of is on the same vibe as the song, you just hit the, tap the album artwork like you would to bring up the scrubbing controls and the shuffle and all of that. The bar, the scrubbing bar, has actually gotten a little longer because they moved the shuffle and repeat controls down below that, so it's a little longer. But they've also added in the middle the little Genius icon, so you hit that and you'll get a Genius playlist that, you know, will, you know, keep going. And actually, one of the annoyances I have with Genius on iTunes is that when you hit the Genius button, it'll actually restart the song. Has anyone else noticed that?
I hadn't noticed that, but then again, I've been selecting a song and then doing the Genius thing and then playing.
No, it seems to work correctly on the iPhone, for that matter. You can also, you know, obviously refresh it, and you can save the playlist as well, so you can have as many Genius playlists as you want on there. Something else that I noticed is that they talk about how you get repeated alerts. You can it kind of seems like there's a preference for this, but I couldn't find it. But it says that there are repeat alerts for up to two additional times on incoming text messages. I haven't seen a preference for that, and I went looking for it. So I'm assuming that, you know, if I just kind of ignore my phone when I get a text message, that it will continue making noise a few more times at least.
Yeah, it'll beep at you again if you ignore it.
Oh, okay.
And can you turn that off? So
well,
you were saying that you
that's the question.
I didn't find a preference for it, so I don't think you can turn it off. So I guess, you know, if you have it, if you obviously your phone's in your pocket or whatever, you get a text message and you just ignore it. You don't do slide to view or anything like that. It'll make the sound two more times. And I guess if you, you know, in between that, if you slide to unlock and go into the SMS, do you have to actually go into the SMS program and see the text message before it'll stop alerting you, or does it just, as soon as you slide to unlock, it'll stop doing the alerts? Or have you noticed, Jason?
I haven't noticed that one.
Okay.
I assume that once you do stuff, it figures that you're ignoring it and doesn't re-beep you again.
Gotcha. Yeah. I think that's a good feature because I had actually thought about that, and I think there was a jailbroken version of this kind of thing that they would it would actually keep letting you know when you had a text message, or I think they do it with mail too. And missed calls, until you went and checked it out. So I think that's a really good feature, especially for SMS. I think they should do that as well for like missed calls, because I think those are maybe even more important than SMSs, at least for some people. But that is a good feature. I would like to see custom SMS notification sounds for, individual contacts like you can with ringtones, because I know, some people do like Twitterific, or not Twitterific, but Twitter, over SMS. So, that would be really handy to, have a bird chirping instead of the default sound or whatever. But I'm sure that again is somewhere on their list and it's pretty far down. I was kind of hoping to get some copy and paste going with the 2.1 update, but obviously they didn't mention that at the keynote. So I assumed that they wouldn't add it. And of course they didn't. So yeah, the 2.1 update is, I'm going to call it miraculous. And one other thing that I did notice, they mentioned that you can obviously double click your headphone button to progress this to the next song, but you can now triple click the mic to go back to the previous one, which I think is, pretty cool. If you have one, then why not the other? So there you go. And I think that works also with the iPod Touch if you have the earbuds. Now, Jason, do you know anything about the in-ear earbuds? Do those actually have the integrated mic and button and all that too?
I believe they do. I saw them briefly on Tuesday, and they seem to have the integrated mic and button and volume control. So they should work with the Touch. It's unclear. They may not actually work with the iPhone, but they do work with the Touch.
I certainly hope that they work with the iPhone.
I was checking the specs this morning on Apple's webpage on the Apple Store. The speakers in the headphones work with the iPhone, and that's pretty much it. The rest, the microphone, everything else, it's for the Touch and the Nano.
That is so weird. You wouldn't...
Yeah.
I mean, I assume it's the same exact hardware configuration. I mean, I assume. I don't know. It seems so backwards.
I think the pins on the headphone jack inside the iPhone are just not the same as on the Nano and the Touch to search for those other signals. So I think the single click probably works fine, and the double and the triple, but not the volume control.
Oh, yes, that's true. Yeah.
And to me, that's a big disappointment because the earbuds that ship with every iPod do not fit my ears at all. So I never even take them out of the package. I have like a drawer full of earbuds still in their little wrappers. And I was really hoping that the in-ear ones would work with the iPhone just across the board so that if I wanted to have a remote button thing and do all this stuff just from a cord, I could finally start doing that and use the headset to talk and that's not going to happen. So,
well, you could buy an adapter.
Yeah.
There's some decent adapters for $20 or so that actually let you have a microphone and have a clicker and then use the headphones of your choice, which is actually what I do.
Yeah, there's the Shure's, the music phone adapters. There's a pair from Griffin. I think there's a pair from, just about, or a wire from just about every company that, you would expect would have.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Griffin and Shure are the best too.
Yeah.
So
you guys should get together
do
and do a giveaway of all of your unused earbuds in your packages.
I occasionally have people. I had somebody I worked with who said, "Oh man, I left my headphones at home and I'm going to LA this weekend straight from the airport." And I said, "Here's some earbuds for you." He's, "Oh, thanks. Like, not a problem."
Yeah. Well, they fit me great. Nice. So, anytime you want to get rid of some, throw them my way. When I'm in Colorado.
I'm with you, Michael.
So do we want to talk about this augmented reality thing? Cause I know Callie, you really, you talk about that quite a bit, on Geek Brief. There's this, new application, by a company called, Tonchi Dot.
Isn't it Sakai?
Sorry?
Oh no. I was thinking. It was
Sakai, that's the name of the app.
Yeah, Sakai Camera is the name of the application. And, The guys, it's a Japanese company, and they say that it's world camera is what it what it translates to. And the idea is that you hold up your phone and, you know, you look through your phone's camera and it actually tags, you know, you can tag all the things around you. So they don't have a database that they've kind of pre-populated for you. The idea is that, you know, people go out and there are two modes to the application. There's the viewing of stuff and then there's the tagging of stuff. So you can go through, tag locations and things and people and all of that. And it'll bring that information up on your screen. So, you know, one of the demonstrations they showed was, you know, you go to a restaurant and you hold it up to the menu or something like that, or the name of the restaurant, and it'll give you a menu.
But somebody has to have pre-tagged that.
Exactly, right. So you can tag images, audio, and text. And so, I don't know.
Do we know how that's pulling? Because, I mean, most augmented reality applications are using a scan bar or, you know, something like that. What exactly is it pulling off of on that tag? Do we know?
You know, that I was thinking about that too, and it looks magical, and that's why a lot of people on the site on iPhone LA are saying, "Oh, it's fake." And I, you know, because you're the person I would go to about this kind of stuff. What do you think?
Well, while obviously it's possible, you know, a lot of people are doing this augmented reality stuff, and it looks a lot like other applications and a lot like other things that you see. But because of how they're describing it and the lack of information and the fact that, you know, it's not pulling off of a database, you have to tag it. And I just don't, and without understanding more, I would almost say it's a fake. I really don't see how it's actually working.
Jeff, you saw it, right? And what do you think about it? Do you think it's fakety fake, fake, fake?
I think it's fakety fake, 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 fake. Absolutely. Okay. But I also think it's an
add
awesome
another fake
proof of
in
concept.
There. Yep.
Okay, no problem. An extra fake just for Kelly. Yeah, I think that it's a great proof of concept. And when I saw it, what I was envisioning was something for trade shows. And actually, I was thinking about Macworld Expo specifically, where all of the vendors on the expo floor could put information into a master database that's being broadcast over Wi-Fi or something like that. And then they have some tag at their booth. And then as you go walking around the expo, you hold up your iPhone and it sees different booths and it pops up and gives you information. And you can go, okay, yeah, that's one that I want to come back and see. And I thought that would be a really cool real-world implementation.
That would rock.
Of this technology.
Yeah, one of the things...
Yeah, that would rock. Sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah, it would totally rock, and it would make our lives so much easier because we have such a finite amount of time at an expo like that every year, and there's so many companies we need to talk to. That would be a great triage tool.
Well, one of the
order for augmented reality to work, you have to have something that it's catching on to. It can't just be a picture of something. It can't like lay over a computer and tell you all the factoids about the computer. It's got to, because, you know, one thing in a camera's mind is going to look the same as the other computers. It has to have something that it's latching onto to grab this information. So because there's no information about that, I just don't see it.
Yeah.
But I
visualizing
love your idea about
barcodes.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm thinking, because what they've been talking about a lot on MacBreak Weekly is the ability to go through a store like a Barnes & Noble or whatever and look at books and browse them. And then if you see a book that you want, because, you know, the guys either go through Audible or they go through Amazon, they'll, you know, tag the actual barcode and then just kind of send that through like some sort of Amazon application and have that shipped to them, you know, so they don't have to buy it at the store. And it's, you know, I guess it would be a cheaper price. That would be very cool. And what you're saying, Callie, you know, is that these applications really need some sort of two-dimensional, really easy to identify system of, you know, getting, you know, figuring out what you're pointing the thing at. And I think that's the same thing actually with the Microsoft Surface. You know, you need you can't just put down your cell phone and have it, you know, do cool things. You have to have the little tag at the bottom of your cell phone to, you know, make it do that. And
if they're relying on people to tag this stuff and they're not pulling off of databases, then you can't go into a restaurant and put a
exactly
code on their menu. They're going to take it off, or, you know, you can't do this. You know, so it's just not working out for me. And
Yeah. Who knows? They may surprise us if they come out with some sort of jailbreak app. I'm assuming you can't do it with the App Store just because it looks like they kind of bring up the camera application and then quickly, it drops out and there's its own proprietary interface. So who knows? Something I noticed when I went to my local Best Buy. Best Buy is, of course, selling the iPhone 3G now. And I thought the funniest thing that I thought about it was when I was walking in, I see the sign that says, iPhone 3G is here. And right below it, it says line starts here. And I thought that was absolutely hilarious because I can't imagine that anybody would line up for the iPhone 3G. What is it, like 3 months now, afterward? And at a Best Buy, I mean, it's great that it's at the Best Buy, but I thought that was pretty funny. And I went in and asked the guy how many iPhones he had sold, and he only sold, a couple. And I asked them to see where it was, and I don't know if this is just my particular Best Buy or if this is just how they're doing it, but if you walked into a Best Buy recently, they have the new Apple sections, at least a lot of them do, and they look great, and they have the wooden tables that you would see at the Apple Store, and they have a giant display with, things happening on it. So it looks like this itty-bitty little Apple Store stand kind of thing sitting in the middle of a Best Buy. And the iPhone was just kind of sitting in between two MacBook Pros, just kind of, sitting there, and you could hardly see it because it was, in between the two screens, behind each one of them because they were back to back. And, have any of you guys gone into the Best Buy and seen the iPhone 3G displays yet?
I haven't seen it yet, but I have oh, go ahead, guys.
Nope, ladies first.
So nice. I have a friend who got an iPhone at a Best Buy for like $35 because he had gift certificates and everything. And that made me realize that this, even though the iPhone is accessible to a lot more people now at the price that it is, but it's even more accessible, I think, being in Best Buys because, how many of us being the geeks in the family have gotten gift certificates to Best Buy because they don't know what else to get you because you're a geek. I can imagine so many more people have gift certificates to Best Buy rather than Apple stores, of course. So this makes it even more accessible, and I think we'll be hearing a lot more people that have gotten their iPhones for $30 or $80 or, something really cool like that.
Well, the coolest thing for me is when I was starting to talk to him and, I was actually playing with the Samsung Instinct while I was talking to him about it, just, to goof around. And he told me that their protection plan that they offer for consumer electronics like iPods and, MP3 players and phones and all that, that actually applies to the iPhone, at least according to this guy. And, I actually talked to a completely separate person there as well, and he said the exact same thing. Now, I've contacted Best Buy's PR, and they haven't gotten back to me. But what they told me is the employees told me that it was $15 a month to insure an iPhone. And this is really you can't get iPhone insurance from AT&T or from Apple right now. So I thought that was pretty shocking that Best Buy is actually doing that. Now, $15 is a month is quite a bit, but it's the first time I've actually seen an official like here. This is specifically for covering the iPhone, and it covers everything except for water damage, theft, and losing your phone. So you can, take a rock to your screen and smash it and bring it in and say, well, I need another one, and they'll just swap it out for you. Jason, have you heard anything about the protection plan at Best Buy for the iPhone?
Oh, thanks for thinking of me, but I haven't heard a peep about it. The last time I went into Best Buy, they didn't have the iPhone yet, and I haven't heard. It's weird. It'll be interesting to see how this goes. I kind of think this is an experiment for Apple, but I don't know a lot of the details about what exactly they're doing with that protection plan.
I think it's a great idea, honestly, to have the iPhone in the Best Buy. It should obviously be a little more visible because, the first thing I noticed, because I hadn't been in the Best Buy for a while, all of the phones that they have out that look like phones that you can pick up and try, they're all dummy phones, which I think is stupid. I think that's absolutely the most retarded thing I've ever heard, because you want to go there and pick it up. Why do they even have the phone there? Why don't they just have a picture? But, that's beside the point. A lot of people go through a Best Buy even more so than, going to an AT&T store. So even though there are many AT&T stores where there are Best Buy stores as well, people go through the Best Buys get much more foot traffic. And, if they see a big sign that says iPhone, they'll say, wow, I should, go check that out. And so I think that's going to sell a lot more iPhones, and it's a really smart move for Apple to do that, especially, you know, now that CompUSA is gone and they, you know, they don't have the store within the store thing going anymore. And so I think it's a really good move for them to do that with Best Buy. I think what they're doing with Best Buy is great in general, although, you know, the guys at Best Buy don't take care of the Macs at all. There's a MacBook Air there with a key, a key that's just been, you know, popped out and it's gone. So, you know, it's pretty sad to see what they do with those Macs. So, yeah.
You know, the Best Buy that's closest to me, they have a great Apple setup, and it's maintained very well. So I have a feeling it's a store by store thing.
Do they have Wi-Fi? Also, do they have Wi-Fi setup for the Macs?
Yes, they do.
Okay, so the one at, where I am in Rockford, they keep telling me, no, you can't have Wi-Fi. It's a liability. It's a, you know, it's a company wide thing that they don't allow Wi-Fi in anything on any of the computers. And I'm thinking, guys, they have Wi-Fi at the Apple stores, and you know, they're not really that worried about it. And do they actually have filters on at the Apple stores that, you know, block out, you know, blatant porn, or is it just anything
yes.
goes? Okay, they do. So I mean, hello, firewalls, filters, you know, whatever. But you know, it's a store by store thing, and you know, whatever. I think it's great that the iPhone is there at the Best Buy, just, you know, because of how many people go to a Best Buy.
Definitely.
And so let's. That's all the stuff I have to talk about, unless you guys can think of anything else. We can talk about our iPhone picks, starting with Jeff. What do you have for us today?
I'm so on the spot. I'm up first. Okay. There's this application I've been playing with for a couple weeks now called Kineo, and it lets you use your finger to draw on your screen and make animations.
Ooh.
And it's like $5, and it's just wonderfully fun. And so right now, I have a series of heads that are singing, you know, just so I can show them to people. Look, I made a head sing on my iPhone, and it's really cool. The drawback to it right now, and it's not that they're not going to do it, they just haven't added the feature in yet. Your animations are stuck on your iPhone, and they are going to add syncing in, so you can get them back off and
nice.
And then use them on your computer too.
Oh,
and
cool.
When that happens, that'll be really cool, because then I can do more with them.
Is there a Kineo app for the Mac right now?
No.
Okay, so it'd be like a web-based thing, or?
Well, I'm assuming that what they would do is set it up so that you can like email the files to yourself, and then you have like a little QuickTime movie or something. I don't know.
Gotcha. Well, that sounds a lot like the application that they have on Nintendo DS, where you can draw something out and, you know, put it together, and then you can move it around. Is that about what it looks like?
Well, it's more like a traditional cell type thing, where you would take layer after layer and put it on top of each other. So you draw one frame, and then it puts a layer on top of that that's translucent, so you can draw the next layer on top, and then it throws another one down, and then you can just keep going for as long as you need to make your animation.
Gotcha. Sounds cool. And that's $5?
Yeah.
And
it's just a silly, fun little program that's eating up far too much of the time I don't have to spare.
Yeah, that a lot of iPhone applications are like that. And how do you spell that?
Kineo.
Excellent. I got it right. Callie, what is your iPhone pick?
I'm a bit more practical, and you guys know how much I love Twitter. I've been using something called GyaZicker. It's GyaZicker, and it's all it does is take pictures and let you tweet them. But I love that because I can't get what's that one that a couple of them allow you to do that. A couple of the pre-existing Twitter applications, but I've actually never been able to get them to work. So this has been working perfectly for me. I use it in conjunction with Twitter Phone, but it you just take a picture and it sends it straight to Twitter with your tweet. And so I just really like the application. It's got a great interface, and it's so super simple. Sometimes I just love those applications that do one thing and just do it well.
Yeah, definitely. And so I thought you were a Twitter-later fan for a while, right?
Yeah. Well, I like Twitter Phone the best because
okay.
It's more like TweetDeck on my desktop. I use TweetDeck, and it breaks everything up into columns. So you have your replies on one column and your direct messages on one column. And so that's the same kind of format that Twitter Phone has.
So when you say Twitter Phone, it's not the service that you can call in and have your tweet translated. It's an app. It's an actual application.
Yeah, it's Twitter Phone.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So that's how do you, it's Jayaziker.
Jayaziker. Yeah, I don't know if I'm saying it right, but.
And that's a free application.
Yes, it is.
Excellent. Thank you, Jason. What is your iPhone pick?
Okay, I'm going to try to be as obscure as possible. I've been looking for a review I'm going to do for Macworld at games inspired by the classic word game Boggle, or for those of the Facebook generation, it's like Scramble on Facebook, where you have to make words out of a random assortment of letters. And John Gruber on Daring Fireball posted this love letter to a program called Wordle on the iTunes store. But I found that actually my favorite one in this genre is called QWERTY. And I'm going to have to spell mine too. QUERTY. It's pretty cool. It's a standard Boggle game, but it's got a head-to-head feature where you two phones that are playing the game can play it simultaneously. And it's got my favorite feature, actually, a pass-along feature where one person does the puzzle, the time runs out, and then they pass it to a friend, and then the friend does the puzzle, and you see who wins. And cool. It's a lot of fun.
And can you spell that again? You cut out as you were spelling it.
Sure. QUORTY. QWERTY.
QWERTY. And is that a free application?
It is not. I think it's $5, but I don't actually have that in front of me right now.
$5 in the application in the App Store. Sounds great. I will definitely check that out.
It's $3. $3.
$3.
It's even cheaper than I thought.
Excellent. All right, so my iPhone pick, I'm going expensive and hardware again because I don't know. I just haven't gotten into the applications at least this week. I haven't found anything new, so I'm going to go with the iHome IP99 clock radio. That's $150 by iHome, and I really enjoyed this unit. It's not as powerful as just your traditional speaker dock for the iPhone or iPod or whatever. I think it's only 10 watts for the amplifier. But the really cool features come from it's the fact that it's a clock radio, and so it has I think 6 presets on there. It has 2 giant knobs, so one for volume, kind of in the same way that the first generation iPod had a physical knob where you turn up and down the volume and do all that. It's the same idea there. It has dual alarms, so you can wake up to your iPod. It'll just or the iPhone rather or the iPod, and it'll just start playing, either from the very beginning alphabetically from your songs, or it'll start wherever you left off on your iPod. You can also wake up to the radio. You can wake up, to the radio, whichever you set, if it's AM or FM. But you can also, and this is really cool because the iPhone doesn't have the ability to wake up from a playlist. And this isn't something I checked, since I got the 2.1 update. But so far, you can only wake up from, one of the sets of the alarms. And I'm pretty sure you can actually have an alarm be a playlist on an iPod. If I'm wrong, correct me on that. But with the iHome dock, you can actually say, wake me up from a playlist on my iPhone, and the only playlist it actually looks for a specific playlist, which is called iHome. So you have to make a playlist called iHome, sync it to your phone, and it'll play from that playlist. And it is really cool. It has so many features. The remote isn't as great as an Apple remote, because that's what I'm really used to, because I use Apple TV so much. But it's not bad as far as the quality of reception for that remote. And it's got a whole bunch of features. All the features that you would use on the top of the unit are on the remote, plus some. You can actually navigate through your iPod on both the iPhone and any iPod. So you can search through songs, and you have to obviously be somewhat close to it to see it, but you can navigate through and choose a song that you want and all of that. It's a very, very cool speaker dock / clock radio. I gave it 4.5 out of 5 stars in my review, and that is from iHome, and it is $150. I'll put a link in the show notes to both my review and the product page. So that is my pick for this week. And so wrapping things up, Bandwidth for the iPhone LA podcast is provided by CashFly at cashfly.com. And don't forget to check out iPhoneLA.com. It's the place to get iPhone news, tips, and reviews. And if you have a tip you'd like to share with us so we can put it up there and share it with everyone else, you can use the contact link on the left-hand side of the page. You can also request us to do a product or application review. So if you're looking at an application and it's $10 and you're not sure if it's, you know, something that you want, let us know. We'll try and get the application, get our hands on it, write up a review, and see, you know, whether or not it's good, and then you can buy the application. You can get show notes for the show at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast, and you can send your feedback regarding anything on the podcast to podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. Jeff Gamet once again joins us from the Mac Observer at macobserver.com and the iPod Observer at ipodobserver.com. And you can also find him on Twitter at twitter.com/jgamet. Thanks so much for being here, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's always a blast.
Yes. And Callie Lewis is at geekbrief.tv, and you guys just launched a newly redesigned site, right?
We did. We had, you know, just kept adding and adding and adding to the old site, so it was pretty much crap. And so we finally launched a redesign and worked so much better.
So what was
so
it based on?
So much easier to handle.
Was it WordPress before?
Yes.
Is it still WordPress?
It is still WordPress. It's a premium theme that I customized and did a lot, you know, with to make it a bit different than the original theme.
It's great. It really, I love that it focuses, the focus is right on the video now. So it doesn't look so much like a blog where you're kind of searching for what you want. It kind of reminds me of Hulu in a way. The way that, you know, the video is right smack dab in the middle and you can choose which one you want. It looks great.
Uh-oh, next thing we know that Jeff is going to be saying, I hate geekbrief.tv. Too much like Hulu.
No, I'm totally going to let you slide because
you're
not Hulu.
You are not Hulu. And
you are so not Hulu.
And you're on Twitter at, it's twitter.com/geekbrief, right?
No, /Callie Lewis.
/Callie Lewis. So check her out on Twitter. And of course, Jason Snell, the editorial director at Macworld Magazine, joins us. Of course, it's macworld.com. And do you have a Twitter? Of course you have
a
Twitter.
Yeah, it's just Jay Snell, J-S-N-E-L-L. Callie does have like 9,000 times as many or something, 9 times as many followers as me. Yeah, 9 times as many followers as me. But that's okay. I feel good.
So everybody go out.
2,000 peeps.
Everybody go and follow Jason right now and, you know, try and get him to beat Callie.
It's not a competition.
Oh, yes,
me. John
it is.
Gruber has us all beat anyway, so it doesn't matter.
That's true. We're never going to beat him. So thank you so much for being on, Jason. It was great having you.
Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
And my Twitter, of course, you can find me at iPhoneLA.com. I do everything there. But, you know, my Twitter, you can stalk me there at twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And I think that's it for us. Another episode of the iPhone LA podcast is out the door.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this?
A stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.
Made up.